And working with this prayer has helped me so much over the years, because I'm telling you this story not because it's so awful and sad and I want you to be sorry for me. I want you to see what God brought me out of the awful plight that I was in, the life that I was living. I had a mother who beat me a lot as a child and even as a young woman, until one day she beat David, and I turned on her and pushed her down on the sofa, and I said, "You'll never do that to my child. You did it to me, but you'll never do it to him." So that was really difficult, and this was protection for David as well. "He that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God, in Him will I trust. Surely He shall deliver thee from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover thee with His feathers, and under His wings shalt thou trust. His truth shall be thy shield and buckler." I made this prayer my own. I really prayed with it and wondered how I could stay in the secret place of the Most High, because I was dwelling so much on my problem, on the life that I was living, that it was hard for me to get into the secret place of the Most High. But then I found Isaiah chapter 54. Where it says, "Enlarge the place of thy tent, and let them stretch forth the curtains of thine habitations. Spare not, lengthen thy cords, and strengthen thy stakes. For thou shalt break forth on the right hand and on the left, and thy seed shall inherit the Gentiles, and make the desolate cities to be inhabited. Fear not, for thou shalt not be ashamed, neither be thou confounded, for thou shalt not be put to shame. For thou shalt forget the shame of thy youth, and shalt not remember the reproach of thy widowhood any more. For thy Maker is thy husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, and thy Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. The God of the whole earth shall he be called. For the Lord hath called thee as a woman forsaken and grieved in spirit, and a wife of youth when thou wast refused, saith thy God. For a small moment have I forsaken thee, but with great mercies will I gather thee. For this is as the waters of Noah unto me, for as I have sworn that the waters of Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee. For the mountains shall depart, and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Lord that hath mercy on thee. O thou afflicted, tossed with tempest, and not comforted, behold, I will lay thy stones with fair colors, and lay thy foundations with sapphires, and all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. No weapon that is formed against thee shall prosper, and every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment thou shalt condemn. This is the heritage of the servants of the Lord, and their righteousness is of me, saith the Lord." You know that I read this chapter so often that I wore away that page in the Bible. I read it and read it and read it, and took those promises as being meant for me, especially for me. And God has kept every one of those for me. As you all know, I stayed with my husband for a long, long time, even after I first separated from him I took him back and back and back, because I really believed that this would be my demonstration, that he would change. He didn't change, but I changed. I changed so much that I'm a different person today, entirely. And God really did send his angels. He gave his angels charge over me. And God's angels, as we know, are God's thoughts. And God's thoughts protected me. Like when I would read this chapter where it says, "Thy maker is thy husband, the Lord of hosts is his name," I would say to myself, my maker really is my husband. And when I would ask my husband for money for something that the children needed, and he would say no, I would say to myself, my maker is my husband, and he'll have the last word here. And it always worked out that way. The money came from somewhere, and the children had what they needed. But I learned to be wise and not say this to my husband, because if I had told him that my maker was my husband, he'd have said, let him feed you. But this meant so much to me, and I wanted my children to get out of Northern Ireland. I wanted us all to get out of Northern Ireland, because we were living in such a violent community. We had bombs going off every day. People came, killed and maimed and murdered. And I had this violence inside my home. My husband beating me and drinking and womanizing and everything. It was so difficult. And I took that promise as well, that all thy children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of thy children. And one day I was on the telephone with a practitioner in England who had become a good friend, and she knew of my problems, and she was helping me. And my son, Paul, was about 15 then, and he came in from school, and he was white as a ghost. And I asked him what was the matter, and he said that he was upstairs on the bus with his friend, and a gunman got on the bus wearing a hood and shot a man on the bus, and the man fell dead on my son's shoulder. And he was so shaken that I said to the practitioner, "I'm sorry, but I'll have to go and talk to Paul or something the matter with him." And she said to me, "Are you going to open your mind to them going to Claremont School? That's a school for Christian Scientists in England." I said, "I couldn't open my mind. It's impossible." And she says, "Well, I'm darned well going to open my mind." And she hung up. She hung up on me. And within half an hour, she came back and said, "There are 4 bursaries available for your 4 youngest children, and they can go to Claremont School in September." So my children really were taught of the Lord. That promise came true. It came so true. They were just outside London. They had a great time. They went to tennis at Wimbledon. They went to all the big plays. They had a time like they never would have had at home. And they had the education and the love and the Christian Science School. And my eldest son, David, by this time, had gone to work in London. He worked for Austin Reed's, and he worked in London. So he was able to go and visit them at the weekends, and they were all so much happier. All these promises really, really, really came true. So I'm telling you that not because it's such a sad story, because now when I tell it, it's like I'm talking about somebody else. I used to tell these stories and go home and cry, but I don't do that anymore. It's like I'm talking about somebody else, because she really was somebody else. But it shows me the kind of problems that I meant is proof to me that anybody's problem anywhere can be met. No matter what your problem is, ask yourself, am I dwelling on the problem, or am I dwelling in the secret place of the Most High? I began by reading a bit of Bicknell Young's article where He said that Mr. Kimball thought that some people thought he was in the wrong, and that's why he was suffering this physical problem. Well, a lot of people think that I'm wrong in giving these talks. I have wrestled with this for several years because I certainly didn't want to be disobedient. And I've come up with this answer, that I've got so many wonderful letters. Daily I get these letters from people who've been healed and comforted from my tips and from the talks, that I know that it's right. And I can't help but do it. I don't have a choice. There's a verse in the Bible which helps me a lot. A few verses from Acts chapter 4. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled. I'm an unlearned and ignorant woman. I left school at 14 to look after my mother, and I didn't have any formal education. So some people are shocked that I ever became a lecturer, and nobody's more shocked than me. This verse again. Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John and perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled, and they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus. And beholding the man which was healed standing with them, they could say nothing against it. But when they had commanded them to go aside out of the council, they conferred among themselves, saying, "What shall we do to these men? For that indeed a notable miracle hath been done by them is manifest to all them that dwell in Jerusalem, and we cannot deny it. But that it spread no further among the people, let us straightway threaten them, that they speak henceforth to no man in this name." And they called them and commanded them not to speak at all, nor teach in the name of Jesus. But Peter and John answered and said unto them, "Whether it be right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than unto God, judge ye. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard." And I cannot but speak the things which I've seen and which I've heard and which I've demonstrated in my life. Now, most Christian Scientists that I have met are very troubled about the situation in our church today. We're losing members, we're losing churches. The churches certainly are not being filled. And there doesn't seem to be as good healing going on as there used to be. And sometimes we all get rather angry about this. But I was thinking about this. I was thinking about Judas. Judas betrayed Jesus. And he betrayed him because he wouldn't go and take up the sword and get stuck into them. He thought that this was the Messiah. He's the man who's going to lead us into battle, and we're going to sort this all out. But Jesus had to prove to him that that was not his way.